Portobello Tilt Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Our Future Hood, a series about how we can work together to create a greener future. It's part of the Mayor of London's Future Neighbourhoods 2030 programme. In the process, we'll be helping ourselves as well as our bit of the planet. Each programme looks at a different topic, and in this one we're looking at air quality and what happens when that turns into air pollution. In 2013, Ella Adukisi Deborah, a 9-year-old girl living near the South Circular in Lewisham, died following an asthma attack. She subsequently became the first person in the UK to have air pollution listed as making a material contribution to her death. Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, called the coroner's verdict a landmark moment. He said, "Today must be a turning point, so that other families do not have to suffer the same heartbreak as Ella's family." So what do we know? Unlike Ella's mum, Rosamond, we now know that air pollution can kill us. So how can we find out when conditions are dangerous, and what can we do, individually and collectively, to improve the quality of the air we breathe? I'm here at the Town Hall with a panel of people who are going to tell us much more about air quality and air pollution. Welcome, Becky Brown.
Hi.
You're the Pollution Regulatory Team Manager in Environmental Health here at the Town Hall.
I am, yes.
And we have James Bellinger from ARUP working in the Air Quality Team.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
And Jack Alexander from Global Action Plan. What is Global Action Plan?
Global Action Plan are a sustainability and environmental charity in the UK. We lead the UK's largest air pollution campaign, which is Clean Air Day.
In Notting Dale, you work in some of the schools.
I am working in schools across Kensington and Chelsea with the team here today on a new programme.
Well, perhaps we should put the first question to you, which, what is air pollution?
Big question. Air pollution is, and I'm going to start with the way that I start with our year fives when I talk about air pollution, is distinct from the pollution that we know is bad for the planet and distinct from the pollution that we know is causing climate change and environmental change and is bad for our bodies. So is things in the air that we're breathing that are going to do us some harm. There are two main pollutants that I talk about with the schools that I work in, that are nitrogen dioxide. That's when nitrogen, most of the gas that we're breathing, most of the air that we're breathing is nitrogen, reacts with oxygen around something really hot, like a car's engine. And there's another type of pollution called particulate matter, really, really small specks of dust that can enter our bodies through our noses, the little hairs in our noses that filter out big bits that we might not want to breathe in. Particulates go all the way past these and deep into our lungs, where they can be absorbed into our bloodstream and do us some harm.
Becky, what are the sources of air pollution? Where does it come from?
So there are several main sources, road transport being a significant one. Another source is actually from our commercial premises, be it cooking or heating. And then also from domestic emissions, again, cooking and heating. So, it's a variety of sources.
James, you work at air quality at ARUP. What are the health effects of air pollution?
I think the main areas where we hear typically about the impacts from pollution on our health are around the cardiovascular impacts and also impacts to things that will affect cancer and all sorts of different things. But actually what we're seeing more and more at the moment is information coming out of academia around the wider effects. So things like dementia, wider impacts where, as Jack has said, pollution is getting into the bloodstream, it's getting into the brain, it's getting all around the body. And so it's that type of thing that we really need to be focused on at the moment. And that's the reason why we need to reduce our exposure to air pollution.
And Jack, you're in schools all the time, and we've heard a lot about children suffering from asthma and other respiratory diseases. Is that something you come across in your work in schools?
Yes, it is. So children are more vulnerable to the health risks associated with air pollution. The three organs that we really talk about when we talk about the risks of air pollution are our heart, lungs, and brain. But we know that air pollution is bad for every organ in the body. A really important report called Every Breath You Take from Royal College of Paediatric Health is a really, really important one on this topic. And there's another report from this year that was launched on last summer's Clean Air Day called A Breath of Fresh Air, which tells us about kind of the societal risks and the societal health impacts of air pollution. Little people's lungs are spongier, they're more absorbent, so they're more vulnerable to the effects of particulate matter and of nitrogen dioxide. And our young people are sometimes exposed to more pollution than grown-ups are. So we know that it's really important for our schools to be clean air places. If our kids have to be there 5 days a week for most weeks of the year, we want to make sure that their environments, that they've got nice, safe, clean air to breathe so that they can grow and learn.
And I had a look at your presentation that you give to schools, and I noticed that kids, young people, actually take more breaths per minute we do as adults.
They do. So a factor that is important in young people's exposure to air pollution is just that they are shorter, that they are breathing closer to one of the most common sources of air pollution in our neighborhoods and in our streets is exhaust pipes from cars. So young people are often breathing closer to the source of that pollution, and they are indeed also breathing faster. So they're taking more breaths per minute, they're breathing a higher volume of air, exposing them potentially to more pollutants that might be dangerous.
Becky, how bad or how good is the air in RBKC?
It actually has improved quite significantly. Concentrations, especially of nitrogen dioxide, have come down a lot. However, we have different targets that we look to work towards. We have the statutory targets in the UK, and actually we are meeting those. But that doesn't mean that air quality is good. We also, World Health Organization guideline values, they exist. They're not statutory. However, they are recognised as being really important, and they are much more stringent than the statutory targets in most cases. And it's plain to see that we're not yet meeting those. So whilst we are heading in the right direction, there is still much to do.
And how do we know how good or bad the air is in different bits of the borough?
So we have a number of different sources of air quality monitoring in the borough. We have 5 fixed reference grade monitoring stations, and they monitor different pollutants at each station. We also have what we term mobile sensors. They are technically mobile, but we don't tend to move them unless we can see a good reason for doing so. And so they monitor nitrogen dioxide and PM2.5, the smaller fraction of particulate matter. And they're in place in a variety of places across the borough. We have, I think, nearing about 30 of those. And in addition to that, we have about 77 nitrogen dioxide diffusion tubes. Now, unlike the other two monitoring equipment I referred to, they just provide monthly average concentrations. So the advantage of the sensors and the reference grade monitoring stations is that you can go online and you can see what the data is actually like there and then. So it's really important for everyone to know where they can find that information. And there are a variety of different websites. We have the Breathe London programme. We have the Breathe London Communities programme. And for our reference grade equipment, it's on the Air Quality England website.
And is that something that we as members of the public can access, or is that something just for you professionals?
Oh no, it's really there for everyone, and we really would encourage anyone and everyone who has an interest in pollution or is just curious, which I guess is the same thing, but to go online and take a look at all these different sources.
James, what are we doing to mitigate air pollution?
Well, I think one of the key things we'd like to talk about today is an excellent piece of work that the council have set up, which is focused on mitigating the impacts of pollution for school children.
And that actually stemmed from the Future Neighbourhoods programme, where we started carrying out air quality audits in schools in Nottingdale. But we appreciated that it was important to focus on schools across the borough. Hence, we have partnered with ARUP and Global Action Plan to deliver this programme of air quality audits over the next couple of years in all schools and nurseries in the borough. We partner with ARUP because they are air quality experts and have the insight to know what measures we could introduce to mitigate against either exposure to air pollution or potentially reduce it, and then Global Action Plan to draw out all the recommendations in terms of bringing them to life for the school community in terms of data and health effects and everything that goes with it.
So James, how are we, how's this system working?
So there's 31 schools that we're going to audit. We've audited 22 of those already. The process is essentially that we have our air quality expert team members go around the schools, engaging with the staff, speaking to the headmasters and headmistresses, meeting the staff members and reviewing what the sources are, where they're located, where the children spend their time, and from that, putting together a piece of information which really will set out the physical interventions that can be taken, the behaviour change that can be put in place, and also anything around active travel that can be encouraged and what changes can be made at a school level. So for me, this is a really important piece of work and the council should be really proud of it. And I think it's something that sets the council apart, particularly in London and nationwide really, as taking firm action on air pollution at a school level, and not just auditing, but actually saying, what can we do next? How do we then go and speak to the children? How do we go and put things in place? So it's an excellent piece of work, and we're very proud to be part of this project.
Jack, you're going into the schools and you're working with the data that James and his colleagues are gathering. How do you find the children are reacting to your presentations? I mean, I've seen them. They're obviously quite fun.
They're great. Of course, they love it. So the reports from ARUP, I think, are really exciting. They give like really bespoke recommendations. So for each specific school, they're getting a kind of bespoke set of things that they can do to mitigate their risk from air pollution, to avoid air pollution and to make less of it too. And then our piece as Global Action Plan is, as Becky says, is really bringing the school community with us. So taking this, you know, technical report and putting it into terms that our kids are understanding and that they're excited about and that they can maybe take messaging home and spread behavioural change actions throughout the school community.
And what sort of things are you suggesting?
So it really depends on some of the recommendations in the report. Some might be for physical interventions. So it might be for something like cycle storage or cycle parking or buggy parking if we're looking at a nursery school. Or might be something like a green screen, which kids always think is something about TikTok and about filming, but is not when we're talking about air pollution. It is a hedge. It might be a fence covered in something like ivy or a specific type of plant that can help to block air pollution and provide air pollution with somewhere to settle. So it helps reduce air pollution behind the screen. I think the really exciting thing about this program is that the council can provide funding to make those interventions a reality. So if a school is recommended a green screen, we can make that happen. We don't just leave them with the information, we can, you know, really take them with us. And there might be some softer, some like behavioural change things that we can do too. There might be things that we know that we need to share with the school community. Things about how kids might be getting to school, or things about what to do when there's a very high pollution day. So I think there are loads of opportunities for kind of real action and for real engagement with what we're doing on the programme.
What we've identified so far, and we've recommended that out of those 22 schools, there's 13 extra bike parking locations, which is 271 extra spaces available in schools across the borough, 8 green walls, which will help reduce exposure to over 3,000 students. And so it's taking that type of approach alongside the work that Jack does in terms of behaviour change that will really benefit the children across the borough.
One of the things that I also really like about the audit reports is your low pollution walking routes.
Yes, thank you. So our transport team have been involved in the project, and they take data from across the catchment area for the school, look at the pedestrian crossing areas, the appropriateness of the streetscape, how nice it is to walk, how steep the roads are, and then add on top of that the pollution data, so that we can then combine that together and think about what's appropriate, where could people be walking, and what are the low pollution routes to take to schools. And taking that map and putting it into real life, I think, is what Jack does brilliantly, because from our side it's a piece of paper. What Jack can do is bring that to life for the students and help them understand what that means in terms of their routes and their choices.
How do you share that with the pupils and their parents?
I bring in a low pollution route mapping exercise. So I take these kind of data maps from this tool called Statera that ARIP are using. And I get the kids to find out where they live on the map, or pick somewhere that they might be walking or cycling to from school. And that might be home, it might be a local shop, it might be a park. And we, as a group, we help the kids to find, map their route home, and then maybe find a different way of getting to that same place that might expose them to less of that pollution. And sometimes that might be quite intuitive things, like when, not walking along a very busy road, like the Ladbroke Grove or something. Sometimes there might be some alternative routes through green spaces in the borough. And kind of different ways of getting to school while avoiding some of those pollution hotspots. And some of the schools are recommended things like pedestrian, scooter and cycle training to really make our kids into active travel champions.
What are the factors that can affect the concentration of air pollutants?
There are a variety, yes. Meteorological impacts are significant. Lots of wind aids dispersal. Sunny days, you get higher levels of ozone, and the pollutants, they react with each other. So it's a real mixed bag, I would say.
Is there anything that we as members of the general public, adult members of the general public, can do to first prevent air pollution and also to prevent it harming our own bodies?
So there are definitely things that we can all do. Obviously, we would encourage people to leave their cars at home, take public transport wherever possible, walk, ideally. That brings around so many additional other health benefits. In addition, we can consider what we're doing at home. For example, if you have a wood-burning stove, whilst, I accept they are beautiful to look at, or can be, and very warming, every time you open it, every time you add fuel to it, you are increasing the indoor pollution in your home, and also you're increasing the pollution outside as it burns. So it's really important to, when you can, if you have the opportunity, use alternative sources of fuel where possible.
Becky's bang on. A lot of our focus at Global Action Plan at the moment is a campaign to end the burning of fossil and fossil and forest fuels, that's a lot of Fs, by 2030. So that's a campaign that we're doing with local and national government. And that's really, like Becky says, to make the air in the cities that we breathe safer. Another thing that we might suggest as Global Action Plan to make a difference is to join campaigns that exist. So there's Clean Air Day is the biggest national air quality campaign, and that is every summer in June, and is a great opportunity to mobilise and engage and to act as an individual or an organisation to ensure your voice is heard and to improve air quality. So absolutely there are individual actions we can take, but we think that there are some kind of systemic barriers to clean air. So things like Dieselgate and Pollutiongate, we know that there are there are wider problems than an individual changing their route to school or to work that we need to fix. And that's where organisations like my own come in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think just to add to that, I mean, Becky, you've covered all of the key points that I think are really important around our own behaviour change and choices that we can make at an individual level. But there's also, you know, at Arup, as specialists in the built environment, there's the whole design piece. So we can think about how, as we work and build our built environments up, there's all of the emissions that can be reduced through those phases, whether it's the construction and thinking about how we can reduce emission from that through planning and better design through to designing for reduced exposure. So we have the best types of building set up with electrical availability and not needing to rely on diesel generators or gas boilers, all of those types of things. So there's a lot we can do over time to reduce exposure and reduce emissions within the built environment, which will then play a wider role for reducing emissions across the cities.
A lot of the schools that we work with on this program are doing really fantastic things with like eco committees and kind of linking the work that we're doing with sustainability initiatives that our schools are working really hard on. So absolutely our aspiration is that our young people are going to become real change makers and carry these messages with them.
You know, the more we can provide that education and the information and understanding and make people aware of where they can get data across the borough, the better, really, because then people will be more informed, so they'll be making better choices. And alongside urban realm changes that we're seeing across the areas in London, people will be able to make the most of those choices, take green routes and reduce their exposure and reduce emissions overall across the borough.
Improving air quality is definitely one of the council's priorities. We have an air quality action plan which sets out a whole range of measures across a variety of different themes. So it's a five-year plan, so it's something that we're very much working through, but these issues cannot be solved overnight.
Being in North Kensington, the elephant in the room is the Westway. I mean, we've said many times that one of the great things is it takes the traffic over our head, which creates a village atmosphere underneath. But what is the situation with the air quality and the Westway?
It's actually, I would say, a difficult question to answer in an assured manner. We know the Westway is elevated, therefore it isn't the same as such a big road that would be at ground level. We also know that everybody will have their own experience of living by the Westway. We have monitoring sensors in close proximity to the Westway, and we do look at those. And actually the data from those isn't showing anything that is any particularly worse than anywhere else in the borough. But obviously we understand that it is an issue for many people. It will depend how close you live to it and what the meteorological conditions are at the time and how the pollution disperses.
James, what have your sensors in the schools told us?
Well, I think if you look at Goldbourne and Maxilla Nursery, which is very close, we can see from that information that at times concentrations are elevated, but as Becky says, overall the total concentrations are remaining below the relevant objectives at that location. However, I think one of the key things is to think about how people are exposed and where they're exposed. And actually, with the Westway being elevated, people's general exposure from pollution from that particular road won't actually be that much higher than, you know, if they're walking along a normal high street. So it's all a bit of a balance. It's about where people spend time, and it's about the sources and what we can do to mitigate those sources over time, particularly in relation to where people are spending their time.
And would green walls make a difference?
There's a bit of a balance that you have to strike with green walls, particularly around the fact that they are not in themselves reducing the emissions. They are just providing a barrier. And so therefore, it's important to think about the wind direction, the location of the sources, and the type of reduction that you'd hope to achieve with a green wall. But ultimately, they are there to provide a barrier to therefore reduce exposure on the other side of that wall.
And Jack, do you find when you're in schools in North Kensington, is it an issue that comes up a lot?
So I think with all the schools we go into, I bring up the sensor data from the air pollution network from the Breed London site. And we look at the lifetime pollution, and the kids are always very interested to see, is it high, is it low? Generally speaking, the pollution is reasonably low when I'm in the school at the session. There might be, it might be a little higher at peak times at rush hour and at morning pickup. But kind of each sensor that we've got on that network helps to build us a picture and helps us to understand this invisible pollution. So one of the things that I bring up as a reference for the kids in the workshops is the Great Smog of 1952. We used to have a very different type of pollution. We used to have very visible smog, and we would know when it was polluted because we could see it with our eyes. Our pollution is now invisible, so we need sensors and we need our network to make it visible to us. And each sensor, each bit of work that we're doing helps us to understand that better and helps us to understand these patterns, especially around something as significant as the Westway. So our data is really important, and like helping kids to grapple with that data is really important. But we know that people's lived experiences of that pollution is really important too. So it's kind of both sides of that picture.
We've been joined by local resident Deborah Eden. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you for welcoming me here this morning. Thanks, Piers. I'm a local resident and I am a teacher as well. So I work in the community. So frequently use various spaces.
And you are also, you're a mother and a grandmother.
I am a mother of two and a grandmother of three. All of my children and grandchildren I've got a good, big connection with the church locally, the friends of those children, and I've worked in the community for several years. So I'm always interacting with young people and have a good sort of grasp on their health and well-being.
What are your concerns about the air quality in North Kensington?
I think my main concerns come from a health point of view. So my point of view would be looking at it as from a parent's, through the eyes of a parent and a resident and a tenant, actually. So I think one of the main concerns I have about air quality is the poorly ventilated spaces in homes where we have quite an increasing situation with black mould. And I think that has a massive effect on the health and well-being of the people that live in those spaces. That is also a problem that happens in education spaces as well. So schools and community centres and other environments where learning is taking place and children are around those spaces frequently and quite often after school. And so they've been in the building all day or they've been out of the building in the playground. But either way, the air quality is going to be an issue for those young lungs and those little young minds. So that's my main concern.
You're absolutely on the money there. Indoor air quality is really important. It is a balance. I don't know if you've heard of the AirText scheme where you can sign up for pollution alerts.
No, I haven't. So if you could tell me a bit more about that and how I could access that information.
Certainly. So there is an AirText website and you can register on that. It's free of charge. And then you can choose how you would like to receive alerts, be it from a mobile phone or an email and a telephone call, actually. Unusually, they still operate that facility. So it will then alert you to when levels of pollution are going to be elevated, which can in turn help you make a decision about whether or not you want to keep your windows open during the day to help with ventilation, because ventilation is so important, especially when it comes to mould in the home. But on the subject of schools, there is actually a programme coming out very soon, one with the GLA and one which the council intends to take forward through the Future Neighbourhoods programme. And we will be looking to carry out some indoor air quality monitoring in schools, install hopefully some filters in the classrooms, work out what activities are taking place and link that up with the monitoring data to understand what is having an impact on the indoor environment. So that's something that will be taken forward within the next 12 months.
So actually, on the subject of the schools and how they've been monitoring that, does that also include some kind of interaction with the people who, like the school nurse and people who are involved in the medical side of what children might be going through, like asthma or any other breathing or...
It certainly will. There's also an asthma-friendly programme going on that the public health team is working on. So schools can become asthma-friendly. It's an accreditation, I believe. And it is very much the school nurses who are involved in that.
That's interesting. That's good to know. It's one of those things that I can now sort of, as a sort of listening campaign, ask other parents if they're aware of, if they know, and then feedback to Portobello Radio. So do you get any parents talking about the indoor environment and their circumstances at home and the health of their children due to air quality?
It's a really good question. Our kids are, I think, really important messengers, and I think are some of the most powerful messengers we have. And I'm arming them with knowledge. That's the idea of the programme, so that they can bring things home and spread the word. They're really, really powerful messengers. We have, as part of what we do with the charity that I work for, Global Action Plan, Clean Air Day.
Clean Air Day. Tell us a bit more about that.
So this past Clean Air Day in June, I ran a special session with Year 6, and we learned about the health harms of air pollution and the risks around air pollution, and we touched on Ella's story, so the story of Ella Adu Kissy Deborah.
Is she the young lady, young girl from Lewisham?
The young girl from Lewisham, yes, and we talked about Rosamund, her mum, who's, I think, the best clean air campaigner there is.
Inspirational.
And the kids were really, really engaged and really interested. We did a small... air quality sensor exercise. So I had a kind of display sensor that we took outside the school, and we did a car count and a pedestrian count and an idling vehicle count. So there are observations that our kind of young citizen scientists can make in that environment. And we also got the kids making model lungs out of plastic bottles and balloons. So a real focus on healthy bodies and things that kids can do to look after their heart, their lungs and their brain, these three organs that we know are affected most by air pollution.
And how do the pupils react? I mean, are they enthusiastic? Do you feel they take the story home to their parents?
They're really switched on kids. They're really bright. They're real little scientists. And some challenging questions, which are always fun to receive. But no, they're really engaged. And yes, we make sure that there's always something that we can bring, send the kids home with about air pollution. I think it's one thing, a kind of authority coming in and fixing things for the community.
Yeah.
But a kind of like our real mission is helping the community to fix things for themselves.
I think what you're doing is great, and it's really helpful to know that the young people have got a voice.
Thank you.
One of the things that we're trying to do is that we're very aware that air quality monitoring information is very fragmented. The data from our various monitors are on different websites, which is not easy for anyone to navigate. So we are looking to amalgamate all that data and have it just on one website, so that residents, students, anyone can just go to the one place to view it, rather than the three or four websites which they currently have to access.
Well, I think to follow up on that and really build on what Jack's just said, something that's really nice from the project we're doing at the moment is providing the students with low pollution route maps to get to school, so they'll understand within their catchment area the routes which will be safe, which will hopefully encourage alternative methods, taking bikes, scooters, walking, and taking those options which will be away from the current pollution sources, the roads mainly, and that will help reduce their exposure, it'll help reduce others' exposure as if they're not driving to school. So that type of thing, sharing those messages, we hope will be really beneficial for students across the borough.
Before we finish, what are the things that, from the point of view of yourself as a teacher, as a grandmother of primary school age kids, what is it you would like from us, whether it's the council or whether it's people who work with the council or even media organisations like Portobello Radio?
Well, I think everything I've heard this morning has been really helpful. So in this, in the course of this sort of discussion, I've learned a lot of things that I didn't know about and how to access them. So I know that the good thing is Portobello Radio will be sharing this and more people will get to know. And they'll probably be, you know, reaching out and finding out more. My main question, I would say, or one of my things I would love to know a bit more, or just to make clearer for me, is what the guidance would be for safely ventilating your homes and classrooms. What would be your final thing to advise for indoor and outdoor air quality?
Ventilation is really important. It really depends on also the locations of your windows. If we're talking about a home, how close it is to a main road. If you can perhaps open a window which is further away from a main road. Also wiping down the mould where possible, so to clear it off, to help stop the spread. Definitely, if you've got a problem, do report it to the council. We do have private sector housing and housing management teams and environmental health officers who are able to come and carry out a visit and to look at what could be causing the source of the damp and mould in the first place, because that's obviously quite important to establish. And in terms of in schools, really we want to see the data. We want to get an indoor air quality sensor in the schools to see what we're actually having to address in the first place. And we do have indoor air quality sensors which residents are able to borrow through the Lancaster West neighbourhood team, but they're available to anyone.
So that's another bit of helpful information that we'll be able to share with loads of people, and yeah, it starts today.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
To find out more about air quality monitors, I went to Baseline to meet Lillian Gowan, part of the Lancaster West neighbourhood team.
The air quality monitors are a part of the Green Skills Equipment Library scheme, which is a part of the Green Skills Academy at Lancaster West neighbourhood team. And we loan these out to residents for a month, which is fully free. So the air quality monitor has been quite a hit in that scheme, because it kind of tells your temperature in the house, your humidity levels in your house, carbon monoxide levels, some PM 2.5 levels in your house as well. So I have one as well, and I've kept it between my kitchen and my sitting room. So whenever I cook with oil, it gets quite stuffy in the house, and the level on the air quality monitors go quite low. And it kind of gives me an indication to open up my windows, ventilate more. So it's best to have something like this in your house if you have someone with asthma, allergies, respiratory issues or something like that. So I would definitely recommend having an air quality monitor in your house.
Do you then take that data and do you use it, process it yourselves?
We do not have access to it. This is sold fully, like they can download the app and connect it to their phone and look at the data themselves. They can record it. They can see which times the temperature goes down, the carbon monoxide dioxide levels go up and everything, and it's kind of an indication for yourself to monitor it and work around it. But if they do see, when I do have that interaction with them, when I'm lending this out, I talk to them through the process and let them know if the levels do go down, they can come back to us, contact us, and we can look at different ways of how we can help them.
Thanks for listening. I hope that our guests have answered some of your questions. As you've heard, there are places where you can find out how good or bad pollution levels are. Sites like Breathe London and services like AirText. And not for the first time in this series, we've learnt the advantages of leaving the car behind, especially for short journeys like the school run. It's good for your physical and mental health and good for the environment. My name is Piers Thompson. This is Portobello Radio, your local community radio station, and this series has been supported by the Mayor of London. You can find the other episodes in the series, Our Futurehood, on your favourite podcast platform, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, whatever. Thanks for listening.
Portobello Radio.